Hello and welcome to the 50th episode of the Mission Chunya podcast. Hope you are doing well. Thanks for joining me on the show yet again. The very fact that we are at episode 50 is because of your support. It's that support that I look forward to while I conceptualize and create new content every other week. As you would have known by now, I cover all topics related to the theme of sustainability, stories that are helping us to get to net zero. By the way, Shunya means zero. The show has an engaging community of listeners, and one group who are very active is young graduates who are in college, just out of college, or people looking for a career in clean tech. So I thought of doing this special episode around the theme of building a career in clean tech. What does it take to have a successful career in the sector? And what should you watch out for if you are planning to be on your own as an entrepreneur later? So to discuss this topic, I wanted to get this special guest on the show. A person who has been an influence in my career in the sector. He is a recognized entrepreneur, founder member of very reputed companies with senior level assignments as CEO and managing director. He was advisor to Solar, EV and other new technology companies in India for acquisition funding. And he has a special affinity towards young entrepreneurs and professionals. He is currently the managing director global marketing at FTC Solar, a company manufacturing trackers and software. And with that introduction, join me in welcoming our special guest, Mr. Rajesh Bhatt.
Thanks, Girish. And thanks for what you have started with Mission Shunya. I'm really proud of what you've started with Mission Shunya. And in addition to clean tech, whatever you're doing in the clean tech energy space or the renewable energy space, it's a great initiative from you on Mission Shunya.
Thank you very much for joining me on the podcast. Now, let us look from your experience point of view. I mean, currently you have a new role. I'm sure you will give us a brief of what you're doing currently. But along with that, I would also want you to talk about your journey as you've seen the energy sector transform right from being like energy deficient country to now like close to energy surplus. How have you seen the energy sector transform in the last few decades that you've been working in the space?
All right. Actually, I wanted to, to your audience, I wanted to give some space as to how the actual energy use has been from the time mankind has seen energy. So let's try and touch at what happened in the 18th century, right? In the 18th century, we have seen in the industry about four, five energy transition based on the use of energy. And especially what I would like to touch upon is if you look at the 18th century, we had the steam engines and hydroelectric power being used. And at that time, there was tremendous use of coal in the steam engines. Post that, you must have seen a lot of use of oil and diesel. And then, of course, in the 1980s, 1990s, a lot of change in the industry. It was information age. And then you had the digital age that is coming in. Of course, these have been the industrial revolution or industrial changes that you've seen over time. And by different times, as life has progressed, man has evolved and man has abused the nature, abused the climate, thus causing what you're seeing today, the greenhouse effect. And these greenhouse emissions that you're seeing in the air has impacted the climate change. Now, just to go back in time, we had probably now almost about 10 or 12 months of COVID in the country and in the world. And if you see in the climate, because of less use of energy in the wrong way, which I say either for transport or for electrical energy generation, you must have seen a very clean environment. The reason being that, misuse is lesser. You're using lesser of oil and gas and coal. And I think as life progresses and as things change, we would see that people would realize that using clean and green energy is going to be the way that life is going to be very, very particularly evolved.
Yes, that is well said. I mean, I couldn't agree more because I want to bring out that line that stands in my memory even till this date. When I came to UV while I joined there, well, I think it was my pre-induction, kind of before interview, kind of introduction when I had a chance to talk to you. And I think that line still reminds me that you just mentioned that back in 2010, 2011, clean tech was in a space, energy, renewable energy was somewhere where IT was 2 decades back. You made that commitment saying like, wait for a couple of decades and this is going to be mainstream. And this, it is already turning out to be. So that was a good start for my career, and I'm very thankful for that. Now, how did your career begin? And I'm sure you made the switch to RE at a later point. So how did that transition happen? Can you share your story on that?
Yeah, so very interesting, right? So just to give you my background, I'm an electrical engineer with a supervisory degree in management from Cornell University. So initially, when I started my career, I was very much involved as a maintenance engineer. And then I moved on to become a sales engineer in a company called Philips India, which with these two assignments of about 5 years brought in a lot of good stuff. And I think I had the opportunity to work with some of the great mentors in the industry, and they helped me make sure that my career goes in the right way. My post that I was in the Middle East for about 10 years. In those times, we had very interesting projects in the Middle East. Middle East is blessed with a lot of sunshine, but Middle East is also a place where you have abundance of oil at a very low price. So the option to move to any other form of energy wasn't great. And it was not required because oil was very, very cheap, right? And at those days, solar power, which was one of the mainstay in the renewable energy space, was an insignificant contribution to the overall energy mix, even in Abu Dhabi or in UAE where I work. But very interesting applications like telecom applications or cathodic protection application for oil and gas, or helideck lighting, where if you compare to transmit energy through any other form, it would be very expensive. So in these locations where telecom application, let's say in a desert when the rich used to go on hunting, there was no mode of communication, and there we had put up the telephony. At which time it was an early stage. The GSM had just come into the world, and that was being powered by hybrid solar. But the price that the individual had to pay for this hybrid solar was something like about $10 per watt peak. And from there, today we are at 1/10 of that price. It is a journey which I always enjoyed. Those were the days when applications of solar was compared with conventional energy, and we had to really compare them from a techno-commercial concept, in the sense that the concept had to be really, really valued. So you had to do a life cycle costing to impress upon the customer to make him understand, what is the value that solar can bring in. And that was probably in 1995 to 2000, that was the start of my career in the renewable energy space.
Nice.
So I guess competing with oil at such high prices was an interesting assignment that I started on.
That is an interesting short story about how you got started and competing against oil. But as you moved into 2000s and then solar started to gain more prominence, you came back to India and then you got into starting an operations for a German company in India. And I think you did it twice. So how has that journey been? And I think the second part of the journey is when the cost competition was hit its peak in India and around the world.
Yeah. So I came back in 2000. In 2000, I worked at Tata Solar. I was heading their industrial sales for the type of customers that, again, we had was telecom, oil and gas. And so it was majorly involved into application-oriented use of solar. So which means that again, things like wireless local loop. So I was with Tata's for about 4 years. Wireless local loop, which is an application which is, in the remote locations, you have wireless local loop as the mode of communication. But how do you power them up? If you run a power line, it's very expensive. Whereas the same could be served with a 12-watt panel. And the price we sold those 12 watt panel with the system was almost at about, I would say, 400 or 500 rupees per watt peak. But interestingly, it's still, we probably sold around 35,000 units, you know, for wireless local loop application. Similarly, we did VSAT application. We also did lots of road studs and things like that. And application-oriented solar was major in the industrial space. In the domestic space, like solar pumping, solar lighting, it was all government-driven at that point to promote renewable energy use. So, in between 2000 and 2004, it was just application-oriented use of solar, and probably the market would have been in a few megawatts, I would say, because it was promoted by the government. And again, the prices were very high, so usage was very low, right? As time progressed, prices dropped. In 2006, I was the CEO for a German company, Konergy Suntechnics, where we had the opportunity to do module manufacturing, solar thermal, and various other application, again, in the industrial space. And so we grew from nothing to about 100 crores in those times, in those years. But again, prices weren't very interesting. We were still at about $4 to $5 per watt peak, and people were never coming closer to use of solar because it could never compete with the conventional energy. Came 2010 when I was to lead another German company, UV India, which was into development and EPC space. They were very big in Germany, and we had the first honor of bringing them into India. And of course, at that point in time, we built the team, and you were one of the initial team members as a graduate trainee engineer, I guess, right? And then that's how you progress.
Yes.
I think it was a good start. And interestingly, if you remember, the first few projects that we did for ground mount projects in India, we sold at about 13, 14 crores per megawatt, right?
At this point, I would also like to highlight that, I mean, those were India's first multi-megawatt scale projects.
Correct. Absolutely.
You initiated and completed the first megawatt scale projects in India. I think prior to 2010, you got the first multi-megawatt project also, and then it's become like mainstream after that.
Yeah, yeah. And interestingly, since we had the technical design from Germany, I guess a lot of our team members learned from those design concepts, implementation concepts, operation and maintenance. And I think it led us to deliver some of the high quality projects for very good companies in India. And I think those set the trend also for good projects in India, good quality projects in India, I would say.
That is very true. When we started, we kind of set the trend. And mostly it's a precedence for what was to come after that. And all through this journey and what I've learned working with you and learning from people who have worked with you, one thing is quite clear that you kind of nurtured teams, and all the people who worked with you have gone on to lead various companies into different positions of leadership. So the intent to have you as a special guest on this 50th episode is, because I cover a lot of themes now that I had experience to work on other space like storage, mobility. I meet a lot of people, and most of them, at least in the last few years, especially young graduates, want to get into renewable energy, clean tech, because it's becoming mainstream. They consider this as a very solid career option.
Right.
As someone who got started under your leadership, I mean, the very first thing that you kind of told me, because you said like, this is the thing that you have to focus on. You have to get into a techno-commercial engineer in the first place and then learn continuously and evolve. What is the one advice that you would give for young graduates who kind of graduate now and see clean tech today?
Very interesting question, Girish. Now, look back in time, right? I mean, I'm not talking of 18th century. I'm just saying look back in time. We were in the renewable space. When I said 14 crores, 13, 14 crores per megawatt, we are at 3 to 4 crores per megawatt today. and the prices of large utility scale projects under PPAs are anywhere between 2 rupees to 4 rupees depending on what size you are at, who the customers are, what the bankability of customers are. So I think today it has become the mainstream. And so that is on the generation side, right? So there are two aspects to this business. One is on the generation and one is on the application of that generation, right? So to the youngsters, what I would say is one thing is that you have to have passion for whatever you do at the end of the day. I mean, you must have heard this from a lot of people, but I would like to again reemphasize this. If you love something, if you're passionate about it, you will deliver exceptionally good results. And I think one of the credit that goes to all the team members who worked with us is that they were passionate about what they are doing. And so I think my first statement to the youngsters will be that be passionate about it. But just having passion is not good enough, right? So, okay, you know, you could have good passion, but then at the end of the day, what is also important is that you got to have these four things that you have to understand. One is you need to have good skills. You should be knowledgeable about what you want to do. You should be competent there. And the last thing that I always, again, stress upon is attitude. So I call that as skills, knowledge, competence, and attitude. If an individual has these four attributes, then I think sky's the limit for him or her. And today, we have seen this with lots of youngsters showing exceptional promises. And I think it is time that when you're looking at Mission Shunya, and if an individual, whether he or she decides to go into the space and is passionate about it, is having the necessary skills, knowledge, competence, and attitude, I think there is enough opportunities in this space.
No, that's really true. I mean, the last point on the fourth point, attitude was very key. I think that was something that you emphasized as when we joined and when we were working with you. Definitely, as you have a lot of experience and a lot of people also got mentored by you, and you have also been an advisor to startups. Again, started by experienced professionals, and also, as you said, a lot of youngsters coming up with new ideas. How do you go about encouraging them, providing advice? I mean, sometimes I know that you are very clearly saying that this is not going to work, or you are clear in that aspect of why some things will work, why some things won't work. How do you go about nurturing startups and young professionals who want to go on their own in this space?
Yeah, I think today, so you put them in two buckets, right? One is the startups that are started by entrepreneurs who are either out of engineering colleges or any other form of professional colleges. And the second bucket is entrepreneurs who halfway through their career decide to move into entrepreneurship, right? And again, start a new company or new venture. In both cases, I think the bucket will be a little different, or what they need to do is different. Now, let's start with the startup on the first phase, right, on the former phase, just out of college. Now, what happens when you are in a professional institute is that you have a normally a brilliant idea, and you think this brilliant idea would solve world's only problem, right? Because that's come through you, because you think that's brilliant. Now, what we have to understand is, does it have a need in the market? Is the market mature enough to accept whatever idea, whether it is in form of product or is it form of service, is available, and is the need of the hour in the marketplace? Now, if sometimes what happens is some of the products or services come before time and some come after time, right? So when I say before time, if the need is not there and then you introduce that product or service, the acceptability for that product or service is not great. And so you will see your success is not coming to you as you expect. So I think the timing from a product is very important. So that's the first thing that you have to understand. So when you start a company, one is if you're experienced, I guess you would always know this. And so it's easier for you to accept that, hey, I have innovated a product or I have an idea of a service, and then how do I launch it? Now, whoever does start a startup has to according to me, to have one of these competencies, the founder or the person who starts the company. He should be very innovative in whatever he wants to do, right? So, which means that his key skill set can be, he's very innovative, or he's got to have excellent relationship in the space that he's going to deliver his product or services, which means he has to have very good connect. The third attribute that I would like to look at is if the person has funds or access to funds. So, which means that if you have good relationship, you're innovative, you have good access to funds, you have probably covered 60 to 70% of your agenda in a startup situation. Most of the time, the founders have one of the three or two of the three, and seldom you'll find all three to be with one founder. And so people come together and combine their strength and move forward, right? And this is where I think if you're good at something, and you have to accept that, or you have to really push hard on that, assuming that you know that that is an area that I'm not so good or I need improvements on, you need to fall on somebody else who can help you there. For someone to have all the skill sets under the ambit of a startup is normally, if you want to grow successfully, is not available. I mean, it's there, but it's not in that strength. And the other thing also you need to understand is you need to understand the concept of a business. A business is just not an idea. Business is how does that idea grow in volumes or revenues or profits? An idea that can catch up in terms of concepts. So once an idea, let's assume you have an idea and that idea can go only for 1 or 2 years, that may or may not yield you the desired result. So an idea or a service or innovation has to have a growth pattern which you're able to see right at the beginning when you start a venture. Has to have enough funds backing it up to see that it grows in the right way. So these are the things that a startup needs to look at. Assuming the founder has one of these three attributes, the rest of the attributes like operations, quality, finance and accounts, operation and maintenance, human resource management, all these things can be acquired for a price. Whereas if the founder doesn't have the first three, I think it would be a challenge for them to perform a business in the right spirit or in the right name of business.
That is well articulated. Now, people do get started, be it as an entrepreneur, or they just believe in some idea or this will work, or under the influence of some co-founders. But what are the other general mistakes that you see young professionals making in this space while you have mentored them or while you advise them on the business ideas?
So one of the things, let's say they look at a business proposition, right? My view would be the following. First, you need to look at, so what is the market? Is there a market for the product or services? Is there a competition in that market space? Can I take a market share of that? Will the prices remain stagnant, or will the prices increase with time, or will the prices drop? Can I add more values and features and innovations as we progress towards, as we go further? Will competition catch up with us? Is there risk from a policy perspective, political perspective in the marketplace? So I guess most of the startup miss one of these few things and then focus only on their strengths. Just to give you an example, if my strength is access to funds, then I'll focus only on access to funds. And I will give very little importance to enhancement of products, enhancement of features, making sure that the product attains more features, enhancement of service options that is available. Now, if assuming you have a co-founder with you and he's focusing on all the other aspects like including relationship, then you have a concept that you can build upon. Most of the time, people are not able to appreciate that your idea can be copied by others. Most people don't appreciate that, you know, you have a heads up probably 6 months ahead of the curve, or you could be 1 year ahead in the curve. Now, if you're 1 year ahead in the curve, you got to make sure that within the next year, you have something better than the competition can catch up. So things like this, which I think the lots of entrepreneurs and startup companies miss out, one of the few things miss out, and that's how the business doesn't. So if you see the failure rates in startups are huge, right? The reason is they miss out something. And one of the things that I always believe is that if you're good at something, it's not necessary that you'll be good at everything. And you have to take help from either mentors or co-founders or co-workers or anybody in the ecosystem to make sure that you prosper in the startup that you've started as a venture, as a passion in your life.
That is well said. I couldn't agree more on that part where you have to be ahead of the curve. And every idea has an expiry date in this modern world. I mean, everything is quite replicable. So
yeah,
you just have to be aware of when is that date for you. And so how quickly you can evolve to the next big idea and how could you pivot. That is well articulated. Now, on another note, for someone who's been transitioning into multiple roles, right from solar, then energy storage, electric mobility, for me, the mantra was, like you said early on, get to be a techno-commercial engineer. So in whatever space I went, I kind of understood the technical nuances of that and then transitioned to the commercial side of things and then progressed. Now, what would you say are the key skills that young people should have? Because clean tech and sustainability today is quite wide than when I started with solar and storage. So how should young professionals brace up for this? There are a lot of skills that they can acquire. And they can move into a lot of spaces, right, from recycling, waste management, circular economy, and quite a range of things. So what would be your advice for young professionals in terms of the skill sets that they need to build?
So let's look at, I'll try and address that into three segments, right, or three areas, or four, let me put it in four buckets. So one is the solar, second one is EV, the third one is new technologies.
True.
And fourth one, digital technology to be used in all these above three technologies.
Okay.
Right. So let's look at the first one. Solar today is modules, inverters, balance of systems, grid connection. And I think there has been enough competence in the country. The only challenge today the country is seeing is the quality of deliverables that these prices, low prices have impacted, I guess, right? Where we see a lot of times quality is being compromised. And so that's something that has to be fixed. And I think as time progresses, that will get fixed. But in solar today, it has become a game of volume and a game of how do you manage your fund and cash flow. Because it is high volume and low margin business today in solar, the basic solar energy business, right? So that's one thing. Second thing is on the EV space. In the EV space, it is just coming up, right? So in the EV space, you will see, again, three distinct things. One is the actual electric motor vehicle that is coming in. The second is the infrastructure that is coming in. And the third one is the digital connect between the infra and the vehicles. And that's the third space, right?
True.
So those are the three spaces. In the third space, which is the new and clean technology that is coming up, and I would like to spend some time here because it's just emerging, is the hydrogen hydrogen generation that is happening, right? So one of the things that you're seeing is that probably solar is being used for electrolysis purposes. There are many new technologies. It is still under proof, but you could generate hydrogen, and hydrogen is then being used for generating energy. And today, techno-commercially in time to come, I would say we are probably about 1 or 2 years away where hydrogen will start taking a larger space in the energy industry. So assuming that you have hydrogen being produced anyway, it could be produced by electrolysis or it could be, there are other new technologies that are coming in, that hydrogen is produced and hydrogen is being used, will make up for firm power. Today, firm power is being by, given out by coal, right? So that is something that we'll also have to look at. So that is the technology that is taking shape. The second technology that is taking shape is electromagnetic flux reactors. So this is something that I'm still to understand, but I've heard a lot about this. And that is concept where you use electronics to generate power. It's in its initial stages, but that is something that will also come a long way. So I guess people have talked about fuel cells and other things, but then that is going to take shape. In terms of technology, the existing technologies also will start seeing a lot of energy efficiency improvements. So let's say if you're using a diesel generator, there could be something like nano oil composition, which you can combine with diesel and it will enhance its output by 30%. So you just put in the diesel, you put 30% water and a small composition of this nano oil. You can also see the generation increasing by 30%. So what I'm trying to say, these are the new technologies that is coming. There might be more, but I have access to some of these and I know about them. The fourth one, which I was talking was, is the digital information, right? Which is AI combined with ML. And here, if you see, whether you look at how do I access information about site, right? So currently what you do is you go to the site, you get information and then, but in time to come, it will be drones that will be surveying the site and saying, can I survey four sites and say which is the best site for me, right?
Mm.
Second, drones probably could be used for operation and management of the entire plant. Drone could be used for identifying defects in your plant. RFID tags. So there are multiple uses of using drone. You could also look at activating cleanings by robotics at the site. So these are the things that are coming up in big ways in the digital side in solar space. Now, when you look at EV, in EV, the digital space that you could look at is there's lots of traffic flow. And we don't know currently as to whether the traffic is flowing from A to B or whether traffic in A is 100 or whether the traffic in number of people in that A is 100. Or is it a mass movement of traffic that is happening or is it multiple movements of traffic that is happening? Or is there a shared movement of traffic that is happening? Digital electronics will be able to fix all this. AI will be able to fix all this. But then what will it do? It will optimize the use of how technology is going to be used, how infrastructure is going to be used in time to come. And so I think there's enough space there also for people to dive in. When you look at the larger generation, new technologies, I think what is happening is, again, hydrogen being a very light element, you need to look at technology sensing equipments to make sure that you're able to understand how effectively it can be managed, it can be controlled, it can be delivered, right? So that is the third space. So I think AI with ML is another space which will add value to the systems that you're, whether you're generating power or whether looking at newer technology of moving or in transportation, or whether you're looking at newer technology. So all in all these spaces, I believe there is enough scope for youngsters or for entrepreneurs or for startups to look at. The one thing that I forgot in all this, I think, right? Storage is also going to take a very, very big portion of the ice. Now, whether storage is in form of batteries or whether it's in some other form, whether it's lithium-ion batteries or any other form, but that's going to be a big industry in time to come. So I guess I've given you five buckets of what are the opportunities are there. On one side, you start with solar. The second bucket is EV. The third bucket is storage. The fourth bucket is the new technologies. And the fifth bucket is AI and ML to be used in all these areas.
That's really wonderfully classified. Like as you were narrating this, I was reminded of the other fact in recent times, especially COVID, and everyone works remotely and people are still thinking of how can I work remotely and still be able to contribute in this sector. because you have been an advocate of getting your hands dirty for youngsters. So what would your suggestion be on this?
Oh, yeah. I'm not good at educating work from home. I think people need to meet. It's unfortunate that COVID was there. And my view is that, if you're an engineer, you have to get your hands dirty, right? Probably in the space of some of the digital information, you need not get your hands dirty. But in space of hardcore business, whether it is solar energy, whether it's EV infrastructure, or whether it is storage, unless and until you experience with your hand, computers tell you only something. Computers don't tell you the real life experiences, right? Just to give you an idea, if you got the right bolt, but you don't have the right nut or a right size of hole, lots of time you can't capture that on the computer. The computer or the digital information tells you the undulation is like this. And that probably the depth of soil is at general location is like this, but when you go to site, you find different information. And what data you gather today, probably a month or 2 months down the line will be different. So unless I'm an advocate of at least all youngsters to have 5 years of exceptional experience, work very hard, make sure work very smart, to get exceptional experience in the first 5 years of career. I'm not suggesting that the rest of the career is not important, but first 5 years, if you have done good, smart work, I think your career is on its right path.
That's well, wonderfully articulated. And on the other point that you really mentioned was getting your hands dirty and meeting people. The two of the principles, something that I really felt were really valuable. I mean, as you said, only when you look back in time, you'll realize how important getting your hands dirty early on and meeting a lot of people in your career really helps you. So those are really valuable lessons that's helped me. So thank you for taking time to kind of coming on the podcast. And also thank you for guiding me from time to time as I've progressed in my career. And I have just got started. So I look forward to a lot more conversations with you. And I'm sure, as you said, you are willing to kind of help people, youngsters like me, to make a positive contribution in the work and the society. I will let people know and people can drop me a note and I will see how I can get in touch with you and probably help them. So thank you very much for joining me on the podcast. And it's been a very absolute pleasure to have you on the show.
Thanks. Thanks to everybody for listening to me.
So I hope you enjoyed the conversation and found it insightful. If you have any serious ideas under consideration and would like to have some advice, do drop me a message at missionchunia@gmail.com. I can help you get in touch with Rajesh Bhatt. And if you're just getting started in the sector, passion is key. Along with that, remember skills, knowledge, competence, and attitude go a long way. Like always, if you like the podcast episode, please share it among your network, friends, colleagues. It takes only about like 30 seconds to share it in your network. If you have any feedback, do write to me. missionchunia@gmail.com is again the ID. I'll be back in 2 weeks' time with yet another interesting episode and a conversation. So signing off, this is Girish Shivakumar, and as always, thank you for listening.